chapter 12, the last half of the chapter, if you're taking a look at, one of Georgia and I's favorite movies is a movie titled The Same River Twice. It's a movie about four guys who, when they were young, were guides on the Selway River in Idaho. Now they come back several years later for a reunion, and they bring family and friends for kind of a remembrance trip, celebration trip, memorial trip down the Selway River.
And there was a scene in that movie that's very memorable and very thought-provoking to myself. Stan, who was an older fella and had just been divorced when they were guides on the river, now has brought his teenage son with him on this trip. And Stan and one of the other fellows is visiting along the river, and the teenage son and Ernie are fishing. And Stan is talking about the frustrations of having a teenage son who he doesn't know, who he hasn't raised, who he hasn't been around. And he's talking, he says, "I just don't know. I just don't know what to do. I don't know him. I just haven't had any control, and I really don't have any control." And the fellow with them said, "Stan, you have control over one thing. You can determine what type of dad he will have." And I thought, in a world that is a bit out of control, out of my control, out of your control, not out of God's control, there's one thing that we can determine, that one thing we have control over. I can decide, and you can decide, what kind of person we will be in the midst of everything around us. And God has some things to say about who He wants us to be and how He wants us to be. Jesus asked us to be guided by three life principles. I mean more, but these three are pretty central. He said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your mind and with all your strength, with all of your being. Love God. Worship God. Serve God." Jesus said, "Love your neighbor as yourself." And when asked who his neighbor was, it turns out that his neighbor was any person, every person. And then he said, "Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. This is, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples." This is how folks will know that we are followers of Jesus, if we love one another. And here Jesus was talking about the folks that we go to church with, the people closer to us, perhaps in our families, a smaller circle, the people that often is easiest to mistreat, those closest to us, because in some ways we feel secure in that relationship. A couple thoughts about love before I get into Romans 12, beginning with verse 9. This is probably old news, but it's good news to remember. You know, we have one word for love. One word. We say love, it covers everyone. The Greeks, you've heard this probably ad nauseum, the Greeks had four words for love. Eros, erotic love, passionate love, which all by itself can be kind of a selfish type of love, but coupled with others can be a very nice, beautiful thing. Phileo, a brotherly love, friendship love. I love you, you love me. It's kind of a reciprocal kind of idea. And then there is agape, which is a selfless type of love. I love you. Doesn't matter how you treat me. Doesn't have to be reciprocal. I choose to love you, to treat you well. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 7. You can read those. You probably know them well. We hear them at weddings, a lot. That defines agape love, and it's a choice. I choose to love you, or you choose to love me. And it doesn't have to be reciprocal. It's just an action I'm going to carry out. And then there's storge, which is a kind of a family love, parent for a child, child for parent, family kind of a thing. Storge actually isn't in used in the New Testament. Phileo and agape are used the most. But it's important to think about those. So when we say love, what do we mean? And when the Bible says love, it's interesting to try to understand what it means. You know, when I drove truck, I heard the Eskimos had 17 words to describe snow. We just say snow, right? What's it doing? Snowing. Eskimos had 17 words. When I drove over the road, we had words, right, Doug? We had words to describe snow. We're not going to go into that right now. You can work on that some other time. And then a little perspective. In Galatians chapter 13, or in Galatians chapter 5, verses 13 through 15, this is what Paul wrote. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. For the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this command: love your neighbor as yourself. And then he puts these words alongside, this picture alongside. If you bite and devour each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. I was looking for a picture to put up, and I had a picture of sheep attacking each other. But it was a little too graphic, so I decided not to use it. But can you imagine attacked sheep? You know, these sheep were just chewing each other up like a pack of dogs might. And what an incongruous, how do you say that word? Incongruous, what an incongruous picture. And yet, we that God created, especially the church, bought by the blood of Jesus, to love one another, sometimes we become attacked sheep. We don't want to do that. In Paul, he kind of does in verses 9 through 21 of chapter 12, a bullet list. It's hard to preach Paul sometimes because we like to do like 3 points. So I think 9 through 21, and I wrestled all week with how do I put these things together into 3 points. Finally decided they weren't intended to do that. It's a bullet list of a whole lot of statements that we should apply, that Jesus wants us to apply to our lives. It tells us what love means, how to do it, how to carry it out. Love, in verse 9, love, and this is agape love. Love, I choose to love you. It doesn't matter if you reciprocate or not. Agape love, let it be sincere. Let it be sincere. Not phony, not wanting something in return, not if you treat me well, I'll love you. Be sincere. And then hate what is evil, cling to what is good. I thought about a lot of different ways to describe hate what is evil, cling to what is good. I'm just going to say this about that. Maybe ask a question. How do you determine what is evil and what is good? Well, I know how we should determine what is evil and what is good. God in His Word has told us what is evil and what is good. And we should hate what is evil. Now, in our hating, we have to be careful not to become evil. Very easy to become evil in hating evil. But find what is good and cling to what is good. So in individuals, if there are things that, if I'm doing something that's not right, somebody needs to come to me in love and say, "Dan, that's not right." But on the other hand, we don't live there. You know, we find good. There's a lot of ways to talk about that. I want you to think about it. I'm not going to try to explain all this because we would miss lunch and dinner, okay? And I'm going to talk about ways we can apply this when we get done, but I just want to put them out there. Be devoted to one another in love. This is phileo, brotherly love, caring for each other love, reciprocal type of love. Be devoted to each other in doing that. Well, I do my part. If I do my part, hopefully you'll do your part. But work together that way. Honor one another above yourselves. That's one of the keys, right? Say, you first. It's hard sometimes to say, you first. I mean, sometimes it's easy enough, but sometimes, I want to be first. And I don't want you to be first. It says, honor other people. Go ahead, let them be in the spotlight, kind of a thing. Never be lacking in zeal. Keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. You ever get tired? I get tired. And I get discouraged. You get discouraged? I think it's fairly normal. Normal human thing to wear out, to get discouraged, to hit a wall. I just can't go another moment. I'm not much of a proponent of fake it till you make it. I mean, there are some days when, you know, when it's Sunday morning, and I need to show up if I feel like it or not. And I don't always feel like it. So I get that. There's a responsibility aspect. But I think one of the things to do when we feel down is, one, tell God, confess it. God, I'm drained. I'm tired. I'm frustrated. I'm burned. I don't have anything to give right now. Tell him, you know? And then, if possible, get some rest. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I went on a little outing with a couple guys in Georgia and came over. And it was like healing. Because I got to tell you, like all of our world, this whole pandemic thing's wearing on me. It's wearing on me. It's hard. A lot of things. And I was just like, man, you kind of get like you aren't good company, you know. And just to drive and camping for a couple days and relaxing and coming back, I was like, okay, I'm refreshed. I can preach a 2-hour sermon today. Now I'm ready to go. be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. When things get tough, when life doesn't go well, when things are hard, be joyful in hope. We have a hope. Our hope is in what? Jesus. Everything else can fail. We have Jesus. That's what the Bible tells us. The hope of eternity. Even though we suffer, 1 Peter said, even though we suffer various trials for a while. And for a while, I figured out once, can be as long as we live. For a while can be the rest of our lives. You know, our world may have changed in a way that it won't change back to what we knew. Maybe not. I hope not. I talked to my mom and she says, I've seen these things before. And actually at 60, how old am I? Almost 69. Yeah, 68 and a half, that's a lot better. I've seen some of these things before myself. But the hope is there, not in my circumstances. Patient in affliction. Patient during hard times. It's hard to be patient when it's hard, right? And faithful in prayer. Okay, Lord, just going to keep praying, going to keep hoping, going to keep trusting, going to keep putting one foot in front of the other, doing what I need to do. Doing what I need to do. Uh-oh, here we go. I think I figured out what the deal is with this. I thought it was me messing this thing up or something wrong with it. I think the people in the sound booth are trying to speed the sermon up. It's like they have lunch reservations or something like that. That's what I finally decided. Kind of a conspiracy theory kind of a thing. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Okay. Well, it's got to be somebody's fault. So, not mine. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Share. Now, some might say, well, then we only share with those who are in the church. I think maybe we start here. But I think, especially if we're blessed, and most of us in this room are pretty blessed on a world perspective, maybe even on a local perspective. So we share, and we do that. I see so much going on. Bob talked about it this morning, just one piece of helping Shepherd's House and some of those agencies. Share and practice hospitality. Be welcoming. Now, in Jesus' day, in the first century, and the times that Paul wrote, they didn't have, like, motels and bed and breakfasts and RVs and all of that. And so people would invite people into their home. That was practicing hospitality. But I think the principle extends well beyond that. Be welcoming. Hospitality means to welcome people. In whatever way that is, be creative in welcoming people. Bless those who... Now we get into the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. That's not easy. Winston Churchill... Read this in Reader's Digest a lot of years ago. Someone came and there was a person who had just scathingly criticized Winston Churchill and said horrible things about him. And they said to Winston Churchill, tell us what you think about this guy, this fella. And Winston Churchill said very complimentary things about that fella. And the person who asked the question said, don't you know... Don't you know what he said about you? Winston Churchill said, yeah, I know what he said about you, about me, but you didn't ask me what he thought about me. You asked me what I thought about him. Not easy. That's what we're asked to do. All right. Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. Be empathetic. Just be empathetic. Once my dad, when I worked for the trucking company, we did business with Wyatt's Tire Company in Eugene, Oregon. My dad was friends with Dave Lowe. George Lowe had started the company, and my dad and Dave were friends, and we bought tires from them. They took care of our trucks. George Lowe, tell you an interesting side story. George Lowe and Bill Bowerman, who was a track coach at University of Oregon, they went and they got together down at the tire shop late at night, and they would take the tire recap molds, and they would mold the shoe soles, right? And have the University of Oregon track runners try them out. And they would mold them and try them and mold them and try them. And Bill Bowerman and George Lowe. And one of the track runners at that time for University of Oregon, distance runner, was a young man named Phil Knight. And Phil Knight took that idea of those molds and voila, Nike shoes. I think that's just an interesting story. But... So they should send Christmas presents to Wyatt Tire Company, Nike said, I think. But George Lowe was in a bank in Eugene, and he died of a heart attack. And I remember being in the truck shop and my dad getting on the phone and calling his friend Dave and empathizing with him over his dad's death. But sometimes when someone's rejoicing, it may or may not affect us. But he says, rejoice with them. Sometimes when someone's mourning, it's not personal with us, but empathize. That's what Paul is saying. Live in harmony with one another. Oh, just do it. Do not be proud. Do not be proud. Isn't it nicer, though, to live in harmony? Isn't it nicer to get along with people? I don't know about you, conflict's just not that much fun. Maybe some folks thrive on it, but I just don't. It's not that much fun for me. It affects my sleep. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. I was thinking about this. How do you decide who's of low position? That's interesting, isn't it? I wonder which one of you think I'm of low position. And maybe you're wondering if I think you're of low position. No, but seriously, think about that for a minute. But sometimes we do that. Sometimes we do that. You're guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. At times we look at that and say, well, I don't really want to have them for dinner. I don't really fit my whatever, you know. Don't be conceited. Right along that line, don't be conceited. Conceited says, I'm better than you. I'm better than you. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. You know, it's not possible to live at peace with everyone. Some people just don't want to be peaceful. But he kind of sums, in a sense, some of these things up, I think, when he says, if possible, as far as it depends on you, fight and scratch and dig and beg and grovel and do everything you can for peace. For peace. As much as it depends on you, at the end of the day, be able to say, I gave it everything I had. And even if someone decides not to be at peace with me, I can still love them. Do not take revenge. I can choose not to take revenge. It takes two to fight. I can choose not to. Do not take revenge. Leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. Now this one and another one, I'm going to tell you, I used to take kind of sadistic pleasure, you know. God's going to get them. I could get them, but when God gets them, they'll really know they're God. I'm not sure that was the way it should be. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. So don't take revenge, but in fact do this. Don't stay neutral. Take a step forward and say, here, let me help you. Let me do something for you. I know you hate me, and I know you're my enemy, but I'm going to take care of you. And here's the other part that I take. This one. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. It was easier to feed my enemy if I knew I was heaping burning coals on their head. But in fact, that's not what God has in mind. What God has in mind is that, you know, it takes two to fight. It takes two to fight. And if somebody wants to fight, and I don't fight back, it's very frustrating for them. And maybe you'll get through. Now I want to say something. Step outside this for a minute. I don't think this means we should be doormats necessarily. We need to choose and be wise and all of that. I don't think necessarily it means we always should. It's situational perhaps. And I think there are times when we need to hold ground. And I think there are times, especially, and when you understand, I think, this is how I view. You guys got to think this through for yourself. Don't think, well, Dan thinks, therefore. No. I think there are times for the protection of others that we need to be more aggressive. I think that we need to think about that. I think, but these principles, we need to weigh. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. When I think do not be overcome by evil, I think one of the things that seems to me that could mean is don't let evil make me evil. Don't let evil make me become evil. You know, if you watch the news, you know there's bad situations around our country that escalated out of what appears to be, from the video we have seen, a wrongful death. What appears to be. I don't know all the evidence, but that's how it appears. Does that justify? Now, that if that is what it appears, that was evil. That was evil. Does that justify breaking windows and throwing bricks and water bottles at people and lighting cars on fire and destroying people's business and stealing. Now, I know it's deeper and there's a lot of things involved, but he says, don't let evil by someone else cause you to become evil. Overcome evil with good. Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of bullet points. And how, in this world, can we do that? Well, we won't perfectly, but I've got a couple things, a couple thoughts. One, Paul gives us a motivation. If we go back to the first chapter of, first verse of this chapter 12, we talked about it last week. Paul wrote, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, present your bodies as living sacrifices, because God has been merciful to me. 1 John 4:19 says, we love, and this is the kind of love John's talking about, John's writing about, we love because he, God, first loved us. For God so loved the world, he gave his Son. If we receive that love, Jesus said, then we should share. Then we should love. There's an example, and it's Jesus. Paul wrote in Romans 5, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. And that was and is us. If we talk about actions, Romans 3, Paul wrote, all sin, not have sinned. I used to read it, have sinned. It doesn't say that. All sin. None of us are perfect. Nobody's perfect. We all sin and fall short of God's glory. But Jesus died for us. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. In other words, you know what? Why should I love that jerk that calls me names? Why should I love that person? Why should I care about that person? Doesn't mean I have to be their doormat, by the way. I can stand up. But it's about attitude. It's about action. It's about how I treat. Why should I? Well, because Jesus did that for me. That's why. That's my motivation, and he's my example. He went like this. There's a song, an old hymn, that says, he could have called 10,000 angels. It's a good song. But he didn't. He said, okay. And then he asks us to do the same. To win the world by love. And here's an application, just an application thought. Read that, 9 through 20. Read it, 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 till you really become familiar with it. And then don't try to apply all those things at once. It'll make you crazy. Pray about it. And choose one. As you read through, you'll say, wow, there's one. Or maybe in a situation, or the Holy Spirit will say, there's one, there's one you could do some work on. And then focus on it and apply it. And just take one. As much as I am able, I want to be at peace with this person. And I'm going to do my part. And focus on it for a week or a month, whatever. And then repeat. And then find another one. And begin to let God partner with God and with God's Spirit to build those things into our life and let him change us from the inside out. And then consider the message. You know the message? Eugene Peterson wrote a paraphrase called The Message, and I like it sometimes. You can Google it. Go to BibleGateway.com and put in Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 21, and then do the message, and this is what it will say. And this might be more relatable for us. Love from the center of who you are. Don't fake it. Run for dear life from evil. Hold on for dear life to good. Be good friends who love deeply. Practice playing second fiddle. Don't burn out. Keep yourselves fueled and aflame. Be alert, servants of the Master, cheerfully expectant. Don't quit in hard times. Pray all the harder. Help needy Christians be inventive in hospitality. Bless your enemies, no cursing under your breath. Laugh with your happy friends when they are happy. Share tears when they are down. Get along with each other. Don't be stuck up. Make friends with nobodies. Don't be the great somebody. Don't hit back. Discover beauty in anyone, everyone. If you've got it in you, get along with everybody. Don't insist on getting even. That's not for you to do. I'll do the judging, says God. I'll take care of it. Our scriptures tell us that if you see your enemy hungry, go buy that person lunch. If he is thirsty, get him a drink. Your generosity will surprise him with goodness. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good. That's Lawrence Lundy Elementary in Lowell. Lawrence Lundy was D.C. Lundy's dad. He was a custodian for years and years, head of maintenance, head of transportation, died of cancer in his mid-50s. They named the school after him. Georgia, when we lived in Lowell, Georgia and Becky Decay was a friend of ours and part of our church. They worked in the reading resource room. Three windows on the right, that's where the reading resource room was. And they worked for a lady named Sue. And they were teacher's assistants. And people didn't want to... Sue, that was a harder place to work than other classrooms in the district. Sue was stern. She was intense about her department. And as Georgia and Becky found out, she had had a son die. And that leaves wounds that don't go away easy. Nobody wanted to work there, but Georgia and Becky did. And they just decided they were going to love Sue, to care for her, and they did a lot of things. But one of the things they did that I thought was just genius is on Sue's birthday, they bought her presents, and every hour, this is right, isn't it? Every hour, they had her open a present. She'd never had anybody do that for her before. Well, that's just how they did the whole time. And they became friends. They became friends. And when we moved to Idaho in 1993, we went over, Georgia came back and showed Sue and Becky a picture of the parsonage we were going to live in. And it was a house built in 1906, kind of a neat old house. It was well taken care of, but you look at the yard. Now, I wouldn't have noticed this, but all ladies noticed this. There were no plants. There was sidewalk and lawn, but no plants. And Sue gave Georgia a very significant financial gift to buy shrubbery and flowers and whatever for that house. Now, it isn't about the gift. It isn't about that Sue reciprocated. That's not it. But they said, here's a person who needs our love. And they loved her. And love melts. Love changes. But it's hard. It's easy to love the people that love us. But this stuff Jesus is talking about is hard. But it can make a difference in our world. Ripples, like pebbles in a pond, that go out from where we are. And we get to choose if we'll be that kind of person.